This is KAZU, Radio with a Choice in Pacific Grove. My name is Mae Brussel. The title of my program is World Watchers. It's program number 830, November the 2nd, 1987. Before I begin the program, I want to thank the various persons who have contributed towards this program. We thank Coast Components at 684-1185. The Monterey Bear is distributor of electronic components. Thank you for the underwriting grant that helps bring you the following hour of World Watchers. The following hour of World Watchers is made possible in part by Lowdown, a leading manufacturer of microcomputer peripherals located in Scotts Valley. For more information, call 438-7400. The views expressed here are those of myself and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kazoo staff or the board of directors. The season is coming for holiday gifts, and people called me last week on the talk show part of my program asking about various subscriptions and the addresses of certain magazines and books, bookstores or whatever, that are available for research that is hard to get. And I made a list for people who want ideas for birthday presents, Christmas, Hanukkah, or anniversaries, or just to keep up on the news. This is a pretty good list, and I took it from material that I have at my own house that I use. So if you send a self-addressed stamped envelope to me, Mae Brussel, P.O. Box 22511, Carmel 93922, I'll send you this list. There's 56 addresses. There's information on how to get David Emery's tapes, Nip Tuck's tapes, Critique Magazine, The National Reporter, Intelligence Parapolitics that comes from Paris, Covert Action Information Bureau, Bulletin, The Lobster that's published in London, Response from the Simon Wiesenthal Center, New Times, Espionage Magazine, Executive Intelligence Review, Freedom, Media Action Group, and there's a long list, National Observer, Mother Jones, Amnesty International. In these times, there is a newsletter called Citizens Complaint Coalition for a New Foreign Policy that just came out this month. It's put together by David McMichael, formerly of the CIA, who is now working with the Christic Institute. You can read, see what he publishes. It's for agents who have left the intelligence community and want to form an organization of people who have objected to the past policies. They're supposed to be concerned, as the title says, with a new foreign policy. It bothers me that this doesn't include domestic policy. So we have to wait and see what this is about. I think that the domestic is important. It's hard to know what's going on overseas if you don't know what's going on at home. So if you send a self-addressed stamped envelope, I'll take care of that. Now, there are a few items, I call them one-liners, that I'll go through very quickly with you. One was the article of Alois Bruner, the Nazi that lives in Syria. Many of you might have seen this morning, San Francisco Chronicle, the quotation. He said he's not sorry for all the Jews that died in World War II. He said all of them deserved to die because they were the devil's agents and human garbage, and he didn't think it was important that they died. Bruner was the deputy and chief aide Adolf Eichmann, who was responsible for a mass number of the deportations. He lives in Syria, and remember, Adolf Eichmann's boss over all of this was the great Otto von Bolschwing, who conveniently moved to California and shared secretary-translator with Ronald Reagan for 8 years while he was governor, and then Helene von Damm went on to Washington to make appointments. The new issue of Nation magazine, October 24th, 1987, has an article by Christopher Hitchens updating the October 80 surprise, and this has to do with Ronald Reagan's deal that he cut with Richard Allen and various persons in the Iranian government to hold the hostages until Ronald Reagan was elected, and then until he was inaugurated as president. This article has been coming out for a long time. Barbara Honegger was on a New York radio station this past week on NBC for 3 hours with Mansour Rafizadeh, and also with Bonnie Sartor, the former president of Iran. He's in Paris. There was a three-way talk show of Barbara with the former head of the SAVAK, or that's the title he had. He represented the Iran government at the United Nations. And it was, I understand, a very good show. We'll have copies of the tape. She'll have them, and maybe we could make them available to people that want to hear a three-way conversation with a lady from Pacific Grove, California, a gentleman from New York, and one in Paris, all trying to say that the election was stolen, that Ronald Reagan literally stole the election. There's a bargain now on Ollie North dolls. The people that were making them said in the newspaper this past week that they're now considering making Jesse Jackson and Mikhail Gorbachev dolls. The children need a transcendental experience of playing with a leader. They'll put their heads on the dolls, and they'll have the Barbie and Ken bodies. Henry Kissinger has been giving interviews lately. This is one from the Kansas City Times saying if only he could run for president. Henry Kissinger was giving interviews for the London Times and also in Europe in the Sunday Telegraph in London. He regretted that he was barred by law from the highest office, and he said, yes, I would like to be president. It would have stirred great passion, he said. And also another long article from the Washington Times, Reverend Moon's paper. Kissinger is sidelined. He's restless, and he's alarmed. And Kissinger is a person that I believe orchestrated the entire Iran-Contra affair for his own particular benefits and the people surrounding them. I haven't done those details on the air, but this article is about him sitting in New York and very frustrated and referring to the Democratic fools that are running for office that don't have any experience like Henry Kissinger, and that, of course, he'd like to be president, and he is sitting in the sidelines waiting, hoping, of course, that there'll be a constitutional change and this foreign-born would really become, I believe, the Fuhrer of America. Nation Magazine, October 31st, has an article, Kissinger and the Dirty War. This is about his relationship to the Argentine junta, but he's been involved in every military coup, the death of every democratic leader, and the putting of fascism into power in every government that he touched. It's interesting that they're bringing this out now because the story of Kissinger in Argentina has been available for a long, long time, but some people are slow learners, and now at this point, maybe somebody smells him in the sidelines, and they're going to publish a little bit more about Henry Kissinger. Now, the man that brought Fritz Kramer to this country, Kissinger's mentor, the great Peter Drucker, was in the Los Angeles Times article October 22nd, and it's a half-page story, and he's laughing at the Wall Street matters coming down, and he said, when you look at who dominates the financial scene, they're mostly people who weren't there 5 years ago. They have absolutely no judgment. And he referred to the Wall Street traders as a bunch of Balkan peasants stealing each other's sheep. And he's laughing at it. Peter Drucker was born in Frankfurt, Germany. He is living at Claremont in California, in Pomona. He teaches at the Claremont Graduate School of Business. He's 77 years old. He's written 22 books. And he's been very much a part of the scene that has caused this terrible tragedy economically, and he's laughing. And he has a strong fondness, besides his German heritage, with the Japanese government, and they're the successful ones. So where he could have taken our corporation somewhere different, he calls us the Balkan peasants. And discussing the economy this past week, I heard United States as referred to as a banana republic, and that is what we have become. The article on Peter Drucker says a former security analyst himself, the Vienna native, worked as a young man in the financial world in London and Frankfurt. Peter Drucker was born in Frankfurt, Germany, not in Vienna, Austria, not that it makes any difference. Then they said Drucker, who speaks with a European accent, low-pitched voice, is vaguely reminiscent of Henry Kissinger, but it does go on to say of his close relationship to Kissinger associates, Henry Kissinger, and to Fritz Kramer, who put Kissinger into business in the first place and got him located at Harvard after he was with the top Nazis at the end of World War II. The Soviet Union has published a retraction that was in their newspapers this past week saying, no, the Pentagon didn't create AIDS. And the Vatican came out with a report, no, John Paul I wasn't murdered. They're referring to the book written by David Yollop that suggests that John Paul I was murdered, and they've chosen just at this time, the book came out several years ago, to say the Pope wasn't murdered. The Russians are saying, no, America didn't make AIDS. The truth is that both stories come out eventually, and the facts that cause these allegations were strong in the first place, and it's interesting that they are responding to it. I got a call from John Judge today. He lives in Washington, D.C. He'll be back out on the West Coast pretty soon, the end of November through the end of December. And he said that the Christian Science Monitor had a list of disinformation that has been coming from the Soviet Union, such as the fact that America makes biological weapons to wipe out certain races, or that AIDS were starting in the United States. And they said the fact that Israel was testing the neutron bomb in Cameroon. Now, as far as I know, I have to get in touch with a reporter from the Christian Science Monitor and see where he got that story, because as far as I know, I haven't seen a suggestion except for what I've had on World Watchers and spoken to various people from Cameroon and put together that I do indeed believe Israel was testing the neutron bomb there, but they must be talking about it in Europe and in other parts of the world now because it was important enough to put a denial. Anthony Lewis has a scathing report of Ronald Reagan in the paper today. He's writing about things that I had on the air in 1980 when Reagan was running for president. Some people are slow learners. The article is called Vacuum in the White House. And he talks about references in the Financial Times of London, read internationally, that we have absolutely no leader in this country. Nobody's in charge. That this president is living with a mind of fantasy. He has no contact with reality. And it may take the two Bakers, Howard Baker and James Baker, to put something together. They'll get two cooks. They'll cook something up. And Anthony Lewis said they should create a meaningful financial policy. How do you do it with a president who not only fails to understand but actively resists reality? And they said that Reagan has been used for an ideological agenda, and the ideologues like what he is doing, but there's no way to handle what he's saying. He talks off the top of his head when he's let loose and conjures up all kinds of things that scare people. And then he gives an example at the bottom of the article how Ronald Reagan, even when he was first president, referred to Tip O'Neill and a desk he had that belonged to Grover Cleveland as reminding him of a movie he made with Grover Cleveland. And Tip O'Neill said, no, it was Grover Cleveland Alexander, the ball player. And this is what the world is watching now as the money is slipping away and the economy is shattered. There's an article just this past week in the LA Herald. The United States wants help for a chemical war on drugs. And the gist of the article is that Dow Chemical now wants to make herbicides similar to Agent Orange to spread on what they say are cocaine leaves, but they could cause cancer and could cause sickness, and Dow manufacturer doesn't want to be sued. So they want the United States government to say that no matter what they spray or how strong the herbicide or where it's given, that nobody will be sued if people die or have physical deformities. And the Reagan administration is supposed to ask Congress this week to give chemical companies immunity from lawsuits that rise over what they spray, whether it's for drugs or otherwise. The overt excuse is war on cocaine, but whatever slips or goes and falls on people, the drug companies should not be responsible for what they make. And the New York Times had a story this week, the release of altered microbes is approved in a tracking test. And again, we're back to the point where the Environmental Protection Agency has approved the release of gene-altered microbes designed to help scientists track other genetically engineered organisms. And in medical world news this past month, September 28th, there's an article, Military's Biowarfare Research Under Fire. A man working at Fort Detrick, Maryland, up till last year, 1986, said they fail all security systems. There's missing vials of virus that are never accounted for, that they don't investigate where the viruses have gone. They left the laboratory, that the Army's list of facilities is insufficient, and biological warfare is now carried out at 60 universities, 20 laboratories, 20 to 530 corporations, and 25 to 30 other medical institutions all over the United States and with contracts overseas. In November 1987's issue of Progressive has an article, Poisons from the Pentagon, and I'm hardly touching the contents of these articles just to tell you what's out there while we begin spraying and while the chemical companies don't want responsibility for what comes out that they are testing in the air or on the plants that grow. The San Francisco Examiner had an article. It was also in several papers. The University of Southern University of California in Santa Barbara has hired a CIA agent for the political science department. The professors are unhappy. George Critton Jr., a two-year teaching post was given to him, and it was made without a vote of the political science department, and he is a participant in the political science activities at the University of Santa Barbara. If this continues to go through, he would be a CIA officer in residence program to enhance the CIA's recruiting. This is what they're afraid of. But the current political science department chairman said the department voted earlier this month to reconsider this. They weren't consulted at all. And, of course, political science is what the intelligence community wants to gear you to think one way and not the other. Now, last week on World Watchers, I discussed the probe of Edwin Meese, the Iraqi pipeline story that is so horrendous. His attorney, Mr. Robert Wallach, having a great share of the pipeline money. He made $1 million already from the legal fees, E. Robert Wallach. And he's Edwin Meese's personal attorney. And not only did he make $1 million already from the WedTech Corporation that has now since folded, but Edwin Meese put $60,000 into this project. And Mr. Wallach was using a Swiss banker, Bruce Rappaport. And the Rappaport was representing a co-partner of Bechtel Corporation, which is Caspar Weinberger, his former company, and George Shultz's former company. And at the same time that the government and Robert McFarlane and the National Security Council were sending weapons to Iran, this time period, 1965, the White House National Security Council was also planning to build a pipeline to Iraq. This is both the same people, both intentions, help Iraq with their oil and send arms to Iran. And Robert McFarlane was used by Robert Wallach for references into the Defense Department, where the bid would go through very nicely, except for the fact that Israel might bomb this particular pipeline, and they wanted to take Israeli money that was guaranteed by congressional votes as a down payment on an insurance policy to protect the pipeline. It wouldn't go to Israel if Israel bombed the pipeline. Now, the most interesting part about this story is that the company that was supposed to do all of this insurance and protection that went to the Defense Department and the National Security Council to protect the pipeline is called Overseas Private Investment Corporation, OPIC, which is described in the New York Times article as being a private company that insures American investment overseas. Now, the New York article from New York Times, October the 15th, was written by Jeff Gerth. He's one of the best researchers in the country. Many of you have the early Sundance article he did on Richard Nixon and the Mafia. It's a classic. That article is just marvelous. Well, Jeff Gerth wrote this account of the $1 billion pipeline that was supposed to go through with no bid with the help of Edwin Meese, and Edwin Meese on with an investment in the company, WedTech. Robert Wallach, the attorney for Edwin Meese when he went through his financial problems, represents Bruce Rappaport, the client in Switzerland who would be building the pipeline. Bruce Rappaport and Wallach work closely with that insurance company, Overseas Private Investment Corporation. Wallach made $1 million from WedTech with Army contracts, non-competitive bidding. Wallach is the attorney for Edwin Meese. Wallach got Meese to invest $60,000 in WedTech, and Wallach is the attorney from San Francisco who got in trouble with other parts of WedTech. And he, at the time he represented Meese at the hearing, confirmation hearings for Attorney General, he excused Meese from paying a fee of $300,000 of legal fee, but then Meese was able to get him the contracts with WedTech, so he made $1 million, so you can subtract the $300,000 from the $1 million, and that's still his profit. And later, after being confirmed, Edwin Meese and Ursula put money into that company that Mr. Franklin Chin, the WedTech director, was advising them about. And all of this was going on at the same time they were planning the Iraq pipeline. The same people were planning to arm Khomeini. Now, the companion to that article, that was the New York Times, is written by Jonathan Quitney in the Wall Street Journal, titled Figure and Contra Network Got United States Loan for a Manufacturing Project. And the part about this story that connects to the other is that the same insurance company oversees private investment corporation, according to Jonathan Quitney, is not a private company, but is a government company. And in fact, not only was going to oversee and guarantee the Iraqi pipeline, but they loaned $375,000 to John Hall in Costa Rica, one of the defendants in the Christic Institute suit. And besides that, the loan was made by Robert Owen, that baby-faced guy that got up and giggled and was so innocent-looking at the time of the Iran-Contra hearings. Robert Owen was the principal liaison to the Contras for the National Security Council, and he was also the one working for this same company to get a loan to John Hull. Now, the loan went down to Hull. He wanted another $550,000 and a total of $500,000 added to $375,000. And then the congressional investigators, or the powers that be, went down to see how he was using the money. And they found that the money wasn't, there was no record of the money John Hall was getting. This is Oliver North and Robert Owen through this company. It's similar, I suppose, the company is like Investor Overseas, the original Bernie Kornfield, Robert Vesco scam, where the money was sent down to John Hall. And they found out the mortgage on Hull's property as collateral hadn't been registered at all, that their lawyer, they said, took away registration fees, and then later, they said, committed suicide. Now, there were other deaths on John Hull's ranch. There was a David who worked with a person, his name is in the Christic Institute affidavit, and then there was John Carr and Adler Barry Seal. And so the very attorney who worked with Robert Owen and Oliver North and this company, this mysterious company that does pipelines for Iraq or was going to, is building up or funding John Hall for whatever reason. The attorney then is dead down in Costa Rica. Who would know if that was a suicide? So Hall has no collateral on the loan, and none of the original partners were available to explain where the equity went. They didn't put any into the company. And there were three investors that were supposed to be there. There aren't any signatures on it. And I believe this is going to be a very big story, because when you get Jonathan Quitney and Jeff Gerth on the same story in two different newspapers, and they connect the Iraq pipeline and the WedTech and Edwin Meese and Bechtel Corporation and connect it to Owen and North and the National Security Council, because the Iraq pipeline came through the approval of Robert McFarlane and the National Security Council, and these two things are going to merge. They're going to be very big, and they're very interesting. And in addition to John Hall getting that $375,000, the Washington Times had a long article back in July. CIA paid Bill to guard the United States rancher who aided the Contras. The CIA was paying John Hall $800 a month for guarding his property where the airstrip was. He was paid by the CIA, and here comes this investment company that through Robert Owen, who gets him $375,000, not accounted for, and as I say, no collateral, no signatures, and bizarre stories going on John Hall's ranch. And this Washington Times article goes into Eden Pastora, who allegedly wanted to kill John Hall, and he was the person who was supposed to be killed the time that the La Penca bombing took place in Costa Rica. Pastora was confronting Hall because of the management of the Contras at the time. And another person who used to visit the ranch of John Hall was Hugo Spadafora. Spadafora is a gentleman that Mr. Noriega has been blamed for killing in Panama, and I have articles about Oliver North and Robert Owen being responsible for the murder of Mr. Spadafora in Costa Rica and blaming it on Noriega in Panama. So the CIA pays the bodyguards for a man where all these various people are dying or missing, and John Hall has been named as a defendant in the Christic suit for planning on his ranch the bombing where seven people were killed and many more were injured and almost murdered. Now, one of the most interesting articles that I saw this week, and that's a real competition because there's so much in the news, is the one that came out in The New Yorker, October the 5th, 1987. The title is called Annals of Government, Policing American Riders. And there's been quite a few newspaper articles about the FBI following American riders, such as Pearl Buck, Truman Capote, John Dos Passos, Theodore Dreiser, Faulkner, Hemingway, Sinclair Lewis, Archibald MacLeish, Carl Sandburg, John Steinbeck, Thornton Wilder, Tennessee Williams, Thomas Wolfe, and so forth. It got a lot of copy about 2 weeks ago that the FBI under J. Edgar Hoover was following riders. But what The New Yorker has in this article is that not only was the FBI keeping tab of these riders, but after 1947, when the CIA was formed, they turned the names over to the CIA, to Immigration Naturalization, the State Department, and the Army Intelligence, Navy Intelligence, Air Force Intelligence. And these raw files have now been obtained by somebody through the Freedom of Information Act, who took several years to get the material together. And what he says in this article was that Ronald Reagan himself surfaced as a former FBI source with code number confidential informant T10. And he reminds us that in 1985 in the San Jose Mercury, August the 25th, there was an article that Ronald Reagan, as an active informer, was part of the Screen Actors Guild, served the Guild's president for several years, and worked as an informer for the FBI. Now, those were the early years when he was married to Jane Wyman. But what makes this article totally different than the years when he was informing, and the article goes on, in 1947, he and his wife, Jane Wyman, were interviewed by the FBI, and they were working in Hollywood with the Hollywood Independent Citizens Committee of Art, Science, and Profession. Reagan provided the FBI with information regarding the activities of members of the Screen Actors Guild who were suspected of carrying on Communist Party work. The FBI memorandum say Reagan and Jane Wyman advised for the past several months that during the Screen Actor Guild's meeting, cliques of members, one headed by name deleted, another by name deleted, and Reagan was particularly active as an informant while in the Guild, as Guild president. In 1947, FBI reports state that Reagan said he had was made a member of a committee headed by Louis B. Mayer, the head of MGM, for the purpose of purging motion picture industry of communists, okay? And he worked with the House on American Activity in 1947, and the report uses his T10 number that he was talking about show people and writers, and that they were under scrutiny for years, and that these files were round about the writers. But in between, or before the 1947 information, and also the expose of FBI informer in the 1950s, this article says there is information, the documents revealed, that at the time Reagan was active with the Screen Actors Guild, he served as the Screen Actors president for several years, but he also worked as an informer for the FBI. Reagan's name first appears on FBI documents from 1941, when he was an agent in Los Angeles office and cited him as a source for whom he had become intimately acquainted in 1941. Now, you regular listeners to World Watchers know that I have mentioned many times that I believe the time period when Reagan was making movies with Errol Flynn. Flynn was in the Gestapo, a long time earlier, but 1940, heavily involved with the Gestapo, and Reagan made a movie with him. He made another movie with him in 1942, and this was the height of the activities of Errol Flynn and the Gestapo, and I couldn't believe that the parts of Reagan that I knew and studied didn't involve that kind of activity in those dates. They made a Santa Fe Trail for Warner Brothers in 1940, Desperate Journey in 1942 at Warner Brothers. But in those years, he was already an informant for J. Edgar Hoover, which puts a different perspective on Reagan for some people, but only enhances what I know about Ronald Reagan. So seeing those dates, I went back to several book sources. One, the Interpol connections of J. Edgar Hoover, who was vice president of Interpol. That was the German Nazi police force with Heinrich Himmler and the Waffen-SS and the top Nazis. Hoover was vice president of Interpol at the same time that Ronald Reagan was an informer for him in Hollywood. He only stopped after Pearl Harbor. He had to close off with autographed pictures back and forth to the top Nazis and cool it off for a couple more years, and then they were back waltzing together. And then I went into the George Seldes material that I shared last week on the air and looked at Reagan and J. Edgar Hoover and the writers, and these were a lot of Hollywood writers, the people that had come out and worked in Hollywood that were being blacklisted in the years to come. And then, besides Interpol book, looked into the Errol Flynn book. Where was Errol Flynn when he was active with Reagan? And Reagan was an informer for the FBI. And then what was Roosevelt doing with writers with J. Edgar Hoover in the same time period? So in the next half hour, I'm going to share that with you and go into the background, the milieu in which Reagan was in, being an FBI informer in 1941. We'll take a 1-minute break and then go back to that subject.